Additionally, we've had the opportunity to invest in relationships with our partners. Navigating the construction of this large project with the state and tribes has strengthened our relationships and demonstrated our commitment to stewardship and collaboration. We've gained a better understanding of the tribal perspectives and priorities that will benefit future projects and programs for the PUD throughout Chelan County. We've also experienced the benefit of using the GCCM contracting approach by working collaboratively with our construction contractor. Although this has been a challenging project, together we have kept the goal in sight and found creative solutions to continue moving forward. Now, using that same mindset, we will work together to negotiate fair and reasonable compensation for schedule and cost impacts. Despite the many challenges, this project will deliver long-term benefits for our customer owners. And next year, when we invite you, the commissioners, and the community to the grand opening, we can all take great pride in this innovative and welcoming place. It will be a community treasure, built with tremendous foresight and vision, providing benefits that will echo for generations to come.
I would just add why they're pulling that back up and wrapping up, just that, you know, the project has realized some significant cost impacts, much like any other construction project that's happening currently with the supply chain, labor shortages, and inflationary challenges. And we are committed to completing this project with a high degree of safety and quality. And, you know, as we looked at the alternatives, revisited the alternatives, it really still passes the test of what we have as our vision over there, which is the best for the most for the longest. And it still is the best solution for that. So I invite you to finish up. And
We do have a video of some of the progress photos as we've taken throughout the project. And one thing I neglected to mention is the percentages. So what this would represent is an 18% increase. And what we're seeing industry-wide is an increase of at least 14% on most construction projects. I actually got some additional information just today from the Engineering News Record that they're saying it's maybe closer to 20% industry-wide in construction. So this is something we're all feeling on all of our projects, but this one was just a little more extreme than we really wanted to be. But again, we appreciate the support of the commission and of all the team. So we have a little video for you.
It does.
How many color iterations did the exterior go through?
Two different green and a kind of a bluish teal, and now we're getting. Oh, and then we have the rock wool. So yeah, we're working on lots of. We're trying to get the community slowly used to the color scheme. And I think what we're hearing now is they like the brick. They really like the brick much better than the blues. And the green.
I've heard that too.
Yeah.
I was just hoping and praying that was. Tie wrap, or what do you call it?
Tie wrap.
Yeah. So we had various colors of that wrap.
Yeah. Well, we talked about a lot about the energy efficiency of the building, and that's really part of it is how we built the building and the wall structure itself is pretty impressive as far as a high degree of insulation, and so that's all part of that. Those products come in colors, unfortunately, and we don't really plan for those colors.
Our employees are going to be grateful, aren't they? The halls are warm and the offices are cold, and, right? Here.
Yep. I would also add to just and then offer up any questions or comments from the board, just that you know, we're committed to keeping the public informed every step of the way, and we're planning to have some drop-in sessions where the public can swing by, and we'll share the status of the project. We'll share information available to answer questions, and we just want to make sure the public is continuing to learn and understand exactly what's happening out there, and want to provide that opportunity. So we'll be scheduling some of those coming.
Great.
You know, one of the things that you didn't directly mention, but I'm sure had a component of the significant impact on the labor shortage, was the fact that we went through the 2 years of our COVID restricted lifestyle in this entire country. And that had to be horrific for any construction project.
Yeah, it definitely affected. If you notice at the beginning of the video, we didn't have a picture of five commissioners with five shovels. We had each commissioner coming out because we were under COVID restrictions. So
yeah,
everything from the groundbreaking through some design changes, lots of things were affected by COVID. Obviously, the workforce has been working under the COVID restrictions throughout the project.
Thank you for the presentation. Nicely done.
Thank you.
Thank you all. The next item I can do in just a few minutes, and it's the Confluence Parkway due diligence. And just for an update here, you know, we've had this on the agenda for several consecutive board meetings, and we've made great progress on our due diligence efforts. And so now that translates into the process of working with the city on if land were exchanged, what the terms of an exchange would be. And so that's the process we're under now, which is going to take a few weeks, if not a little bit more. And so I know, Commissioner Congdon, you had the question of whether we'll arrive at a decision point this year. It's going to be close. Can't say for certain whether it'll happen this year or not, but we're striving to get there.
That's okay. No pressure.
That's all I had.
So for my benefit, the way I'm looking at this is we've really, as commissioners, have really been pushing staff to keep in front of us with information on Confluence. At this point, I'm not expecting to see anything come before us until you see something that you need. But at this point, we're at a point where we've done our due diligence until we have more need to have information come before us. Is that
That's correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, the question was, do you want to keep this on as a standing item, or?
Well, and I think with my commissioners here, the point that I'm making is I'm not seeing as much need to continually bring this in front of us until such time as you see the need to bring it in front of us.
Okay.
I think we've had all of the information brought to us, and we're up to speed, and until some decision needs to be made, there's no reason to keep bringing it before us.
I agree.
Dennis and Gary, are you in concurrence with that? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, at this time, we are going to go in recess for lunch.
Do you want to check for public comment? One more.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, and we can check for public comment. Do you have anything you want to share?
Okay. Not until this afternoon.
Okay. So before I close, we had public comment this morning, but is there anything else to come before the commission today from the public? With none coming before us, we will recess for lunch and return at 1 p.m. today. Thank you very much. Okay, I'll call the meeting to order. Good afternoon. Welcome to the November 7th, 2022 business session of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission meeting. It's quite a mouthful. I'd like to remind everyone to please silence any electronic devices that you have with you today. For those online, please mute your screens. We welcome the public's input at our meetings and remind you that these meetings are recorded. If you wish to address any item on the agenda, please raise your hand or either physically or electronically that you wish to speak. When recognized, please state your name and address for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes. So at this time, we will start our afternoon meeting with an update on the Malaga Park and welcome our visitors who are here today.
Yeah, Lisa Dowling from the county here and Mike Caputa and Commissioner Overbay is actually on the line as well.
Hi, Kevin.
Hey, good afternoon, all. I just wanted to take a moment, if I could, and just thank you all and your staff for the partnership they had with the county regarding this project. And as we move forward, I know staff is going to provide you with a great briefing, but I just wanted to extend my appreciation for the relationship that has been forged between the county and the PUD, not only this project, but on other projects as we move forward. So just wanted to pop in. I apologize I can't be there. I have another pending meeting here in Douglas County with a joint commission there. So anyway, have a great rest of your meeting, but I'll keep tuned in until I have to leave. So thank you again for the opportunity.
Thanks, Kevin. Welcome, Mike and Lisa.
Thank you.
Commissioners, thank you. Mike Caputa, I'm the director of the Chelan County Natural Resources Department. Want to reiterate what Commissioner Overbay was saying. We really appreciate working with the PUD and the PUD staff on the Malaga Park project. And just stepping back, just our organizational relationship between the county and the PUD has been really strong, and we appreciate being able to just call you on the phone and talk to you about things and work together. So thank you very much for that. Lisa has the most interesting part of this afternoon, so I'm going to turn it over to her.
Thank you so much, Mike, and thank you, Kevin, on the line as well. And I just want to thank you all for inviting us to come and share our updates with you today. And I also just wanted to mention that there's an appendix set of slides to this project, too, that provides additional information that I think is linked with the meeting minutes and materials. So I'll provide kind of a broad overview today, but if anybody's interested in digging into it more, please feel free to talk to me after the fact or dig into those appendices. I think I can control this, right? Yes. Good. So this is just a brief background on this project. The county and the PUD entered into an early action agreement via a MOU to look at pursuing funding via a FERC relicensing process as an early action measure. And since then, we've been working in partnership with the Malaga Clackam Community Council to complete the site suitability study, engage the community there in Malaga around what kind of features they'd like to see incorporated in a park, and then wrap those features into a 30% park design, which we're excited to share today. And I also just wanted to connect you guys to three specific plans that this particular project aligns well with. First is the Chelan County Comprehensive Plan that has parts in it that recommend park planning specific to Malaga. And then the Malaga Vision Plan that has specific recommendations for additional recreation opportunities. And then the Shoreline Master Program that identified Malaga as a priority community for waterfront access. So we are currently looking to acquire 6 parcels here located near downtown Malaga, owned by 3 different landowners. All 3 landowners have been engaged in this process from the start. 2 of the landowners live on site and are working or produce tree fruit, essentially, and they're interested in getting out of the tree fruit production, but they'd like to stay on site, and they're excited to have a park in their front yard. And the third landowner is the one that owns 4 of the parcels here. He doesn't live in Malaga and is just simply interested in selling his property. And so we, I think it's on the next, or you see it right here, the project scope. We worked with the Recreation and Conservation Offices to submit 2 applications for funding for this project to acquire these lands. Approximately 30 acres, which is the full park, will be in, was submitted in an application for the Washington Wildlife Recreation Program under the local parks funding opportunity. And then the one parcel that's in the navy blue up in the top left is about 8.5 acres and a quarter mile of shoreline there that is in the Aquatic Lands Enhancements Program because it aligns really nicely with non-motorized watercraft access. And so this is an image here that kind of shows our draft 30% park design. There's a few notable things here that I think are really exciting that align really well with that Malaga community vision. They had indicated throughout our community engagement process that they're really interested in seeing a network of paths and walkways, both motorized boat access as well as non-motorized watercraft access, a swimming area, visual and passive recreation opportunities, ways to connect with the river, an ADA accessible trail network, opportunities for education and interpretive signage, and also sporting facilities and family amenities. All of those features have been incorporated into this park. As you can see over here on the eastern portion, that would be on the right side of your screen, we have more of a dispersed trail network that will have sites that will include workout stations and view arenas. We have sporting facilities in the center location of the park, and then we have a boat launch that's really the key point for the FERC conceptual design application that we're working towards. And some portion of that boat launch is what we intend to enroll into that application. And then to the westward side, we have a whole network of ADA accessible trails that will include interpretive signage to connect visitors with the education around the salmon recovery efforts in the Columbia River, the importance of shoreline and riparian ecosystems, as well as the importance of the shrub steppe ecosystems. Approximately 15 acres of this land right now is in undeveloped mature shrub steppe habitat that supports a wide variety of plant and wildlife species. So, and in the appendices, it's going to go into great detail on all the various reasons why this was the best site for Malaga. But in short, a couple of the things to note are that it's centrally located to downtown Malaga. Our velocity and flow analysis showed that this is one of the few areas that had optimal conditions for watercraft access and swimming and wading. And then in addition to that, it also has topography that makes access to the waterfront feasible compared to other sites. And it's within walking distance of downtown Malaga, and it has one of the only public railroad crossings, which is very important in terms of trying to get boats down to the water. And it also provides an opportunity for expansion. So the orange polygon up here shows the current park in Malaga that is operated by a very tight budget by the community. And due to its relatively small size and facilities, it just falls short in terms of really meeting their recreation need. But we would be able to revisit that park and kind of fold it into a larger plan for expanded network of recreation in Malaga, which we think is a pretty exciting opportunity. So we started community and stakeholder engagement processes early on, and we've continued them throughout. We kicked it off with a stakeholder tour, looking at all the various sites that we included in our site suitability study. We followed that up with a pop-up event. We've done mailers and postcards and flyers throughout the entire census area and zip code. We did a survey effort that was in both English and Spanish and provided in both paper and digital formats. We did a virtual event as well as an in-person pop-up event there in the community of Malaga to learn more about what specific park features the community of Malaga would like to see. And across all of these different platforms and methods of engagement, the same trends held true in the sense that what the community of Malaga really ranked supreme was waterfront access, both for passive and active recreation, viewing opportunities, wildlife opportunities, swimming, wading, fishing, boating, where conditions allow. But then right up there in that top tier were family activities, including playgrounds and picnic facilities like ramadas, field and courts for sports, and then an expanded network of trails. And regardless of whether or not we looked at the community as a whole or the specific demographics, there were significant overlaps in these priorities. And the particular site that we've honed in on is the only site in Malaga that can fold all of these features into a singular park plan that represents that vision. And so we are really excited to be engaging and working with our partners here at the PUD. We've had a wonderful time working with them over the last couple of years, really working and developing an application for a FERC conceptual amendment. We are currently on the precipice of launching our pre-consultation effort with the permitting agencies and the tribes and doing another round of community engagement to really sort of show the community of Malaga how we listened and heard to what they had to say and have factored that into our park design. And then we're going to work on developing any other supporting documentation that we need to complete the 30% design and apply for a FERC conceptual amendment. And the partnership is deeply committed to seeing this project through. The PUD has already invested a large amount of money towards the development of the 30% design, and as has the county. And the Malaga-Clackam Community Council has been a tremendous part of guiding and steering and vetting our thoughts, ideas, and design development. And we will continue working within that partnership. This is a visual of where our project schedule is. Currently right now, we are looking at folding in feedback from the site diagnostics meeting with our civil engineers, and any feedback we may gain from the joint meeting today, as well as the upcoming stakeholder engagement and early consultation process into completing that 30% design. And then we will also work on pursuing additional funding opportunities for the next level of design, permitting, and construction costs. We'll be working with RCO to move through the grant process in 2023, and we're working to finalize our documentation to submit a waiver of retroactivity so that we can expedite the acquisition process in advance of grant awards. And this is just sort of a summary of what those next steps look like. Again, just sort of reiterating it in a bulleted fashion, but really it's, we have a couple irons in the fire, and we'll be moving them forward concurrently. Again, looking at finalizing our current grant process, looking to future funding opportunities, working on that pre-consultation effort with the permitting agencies and the tribes. We have a couple other stakeholder and community engagement events on the horizon here before the holidays hit full swing. And then next year, we'll be looking to advance that design to the 60% level and begin the permitting process. And then we'll be working in direct partnership with our folks here at the PUD to develop, consult, and refine, and eventually submit our FERC conceptual amendment. And that will help us inform future design developments. And with that, I'd just like to, again, connect you guys to the information in the appendices. There's a lot in there that's great. And also, our project website has a lot of stuff on there that I think is useful and adds value to the conversation. And I'm happy to answer any questions today or after today. So feel free to reach out to me anytime. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Lisa. Commissioners, any questions?
I guess I've got one. This whole plan looks great. And I always, my mind leaps down the road and I ask the question, okay, 5, 10, 15 years from now, overall management of this park, what will that look like? We had any conversation about that?
We have had early conversations, although I would say that there's a lot there that needs to still be fleshed out. But the county will own and operate the park. We will work in tandem with the PUD on the portion that we submit for the FERC conceptual amendment. Right now, we are finalizing our cost estimates for the boat launch area that will help inform what that project boundary looks like. And we know that, you know, part of that FERC conceptual amendment will include some operation and maintenance for that specific facility moving forward. With the county, we will likely use other local appropriations and funding to help support operation and maintenance into the future. Malaga has a lot of exciting things on the horizon for it in terms of development, and we will be looking for cost efficiencies on those lines as well.
Cool. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions or comments? Thank you both, Kevin, for being here with us today and giving us an update.
Thank you very much.
Thanks
I
for
appreciate
your time.
Your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. All right.
Go ahead. I was going to say the hearing at 1:30. We should probably have it 1:30.
Yeah. Was going to be my next question.
Okay.
So let's go ahead and move on into the consent agenda and resolutions, and then we'll bring us back to 1:30 for the public hearing. Okay, commissioners, We have a consent agenda in front of us. Is there a motion to accept the consent agenda?
I would make such a motion.
I'll second.
Is there any discussion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. Let's go on into resolution number 14.
Yep. Agenda item number 14 is a resolution ratifying field work order change orders number 3-07, 8, 9, 10, and 11, and approving execution of field work order change order number 3-12 for the third and fourth units under contract number 14-22 with Voith Hydro Incorporated of York, Pennsylvania for Rocky Reach units C8 through 11 turbine repairs. And with us online is Mitch Clark.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Yeah, so I'm presenting this resolution, as Kirk mentioned, to ratify existing field work orders that have been executed under the 1422 contract with Voith. The 1422 contract with Voith, in case anyone's not familiar, is for the refurbishment of our large units here at Rocky Reach. It's a long-term project. We've already rebuilt units 8 and 9, and we still have 10 and 11 left to rebuild here in the next year or two. So just going down the field work orders that have been executed since the last ratification was approved. So 3-07 was executed to establish contingency field service labor prices on a time and material basis with Voith. It's purely a contingency field work order to put in place if our district resources that we're planning on using were to become unavailable. This would provide us a backup labor source for disassembly and reassembly of C10, C11. Field work order 3-08 involved milestone schedule modifications. It was moving the third unit outage start from July 7th of 2022 to November 7th of 2022. Field work order 3-09 added some engineering scope to the Voith water-filled hub scope. So some of the things that we had added were a reassessment of the blade finite element analysis. So the blades had a completed finite element analysis early on in this project. But since then, the small units had gone through a similar assessment, having FEA completed on the blades. And during those subsequent small unit assessments, we found some techniques to improve the model and the assessment to give us more accurate analysis of those stresses. So what we've asked Voith to do is go back and update the large unit blade FEAs, incorporating those lessons learned from the small unit FEAs, and represent those results from that FEA. In addition to that, we've added hub static balancing to the shop scope for Voith for units C10 and C11 to ensure that the mechanical changes that are being made in the units for the water-filled hub don't have any impact on the overall balancing of the hub and the turbine unit. And lastly, we added, we wanted them to investigate the water leakage collection design for C10, C11. So the initial proposal from Voith was to add some additional equipment into the turbine pit of C10 C11 for collecting and monitoring hub water during operation. We had some concepts developed by district engineering that had the possibility of eliminating some of that new equipment and be able to utilize existing equipment on the unit. But ultimately, the recommendation was that the water leakage collection that Voith had recommended with an additional tank in the turbine pit is recommended for a number of reasons. So We'll be moving forward with that water leakage collection in the turbine pit per their original proposal. 3-10 was a field work order to add shop machining time to hone the blade lever bushings to ensure that they meet the specified tolerances of those components. And in addition to that is machining of the spinners for the unit C10, C11. In the base scope of the project, there was no scope for Voith to do any refurbishment on the spinner components, but due to some of the design changes stemming from the water-filled hub modifications, it was determined that some additional machining will have to happen on the spinner. So this field work order covers the transportation of the spinner back to Voith facilities in York and performing that that machining scope. The final field work order was additional milestone schedule modifications, once again, pushing the start of the third unit outage from November 7th of 2022 to January 23rd of 2023. That field work order also included granting Voith an additional 5 days per unit to their shop scope to perform that hub static balancing that was previously added under Field Work Order 3-09. So those five field work orders were approved for a total cost of all five of $389,703.68. In addition to those field work orders, we're asking for approval for Field Work Order Change Order 3-12, adding engineering hours to Voith scope to look at their oil leakage collection, similar to the water leakage collection that was previously mentioned. While the water leakage collection, we did need to maintain a new collection vessel in the turbine pit. Both the district and Voith agree that we can eliminate the oil leakage collection vessel and be able to utilize existing equipment. So this engineering effort is for them to update their drawings with the new arrangement and procure all equipment relating to that change. And then the last change was for low-level hub water sensors for C10, C11. So the previously mentioned water collection vessel that we will have in the turbine pit is capable of monitoring high water levels within the hub. If we were to have a water intrusion into the hub during operation, it would alarm on a high level. But during design reviews, we were getting questions from the plant of, well, what if we were to have a low liquid level? If water were to be leaking out of the hub, how would we get indication? So we've gone back to Voith and we've added this capability now. So it'll be a separate sensor that will indicate on low liquid levels as well. So in either situation, if we have a circumstance that's out of normal operating range in terms of that water level, our operators will be getting an alarm so that we can go in and do subsequent investigations to figure out why the water levels are abnormal. So that field work order 3-12 will have an increase to the total project cost of $113,050. And with that, are there any questions?
Commissioners, any questions? I think what we'll do is we'll go ahead and is there a motion for this resolution? We'll conclude that and then move into our public hearing.
Move approval of resolution number 14.
Are there any
second?
Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Okay, we're about 5 minutes.
We want to do a, John, you want to do a, we got a manager item that John could probably do in 5 minutes.
Put the heat on John.
You're on the clock.
All right. Well, Commissioners, John Stoll, Managing Director of Customer Utilities. Just a brief storm update. We were fairly fortunate in Chelan County. We did have some impacts from the weather system that started rolling in late last week. Probably the biggest impact was up there near the pass where we had a tree in the line in the transmission that was pretty hard to get to, but they eventually Saturday morning got it taken care of. Had issue up at Forest Ridge. It was really not weather related, more load related, where we had a fuse melt, but that was taken care of. Excuse me. And then we had early this morning up in Chelan, we had another tree in the line that they took care of. Lots of little things, nothing major. In fact, some of the damage was more on the service lines overhead going to homes where, you know, there's some cleanup that the homeowners have to do to, and we'll stand ready to assist where we can. But all in all, compared to the west side, we really, you know, were fortunate and didn't see too much of an impact. Speaking of the west side, Saturday we sent a crew over to help Snowbud. I know they had a lot of customers out, so crew left. They're still there, and then they've continued to ask for more help. So once we got through the weekend this morning, we sent another crew. So we've got two crews over there. Most likely they'll be back hopefully by the end of the day on Wednesday, but we're happy to help out and get their customers back in power.
Yeah. Good to hear. I was over there, and my daughter was getting married that Saturday and had no electricity in the venue.
Yeah.
The officiant called in sick, and the wedding planner called in sick. And so if anything could have gone wrong, the lady couldn't make the cakes. And yeah. So it's nice to know we got the electricity on, and I'll give credit to Chelan PUD for coming over to help out.
Just something to giving credit. I appreciate Rachel's updates over the weekend and Cody Murdoch, who really had to do a lot of the coordinating the boots on the ground, and Dan Mosher as well. I know that made for a long weekend for those folks, and appreciate their help.
Great. You know, John, there's another thing that should be stated in this public power arena, the mutual aid aspect of what we're doing here. And I know that there's been reciprocal times when people have come to help us, but part of public power is that reciprocal aid. And Facebook, Snowbud Facebook, I think it was on Saturday or maybe it was yesterday, listed, I think, 6 or 7 different PUDs from around the state that all converged on Snohomish County to help them get their lights back on.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. One of the joys of this. And we really like to be on the end of giving aid.
Yeah. Great. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Okay, at this time, why don't I invite Dave Nelson to come up, and we'll get ready for item number 10 on our agenda, public hearing for the 2023 preliminary budget presentation. And Dave, this is our first public hearing for our budget. So, yes. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. Good afternoon. I'm Dave Nelson, Manager of Strategic Financial Planning. And as you mentioned, I'm here for the first of two public hearings on the budget for 2023. So today we'll just cover the timeline, some initial results in our first roll-up of the budget, and then next steps. We're not asking for any board action today. Reminder of our timeline, we're in the first of the two public hearings, and then we'll be back in December for asking for a budget approval on the 5th. Seen this slide before, just a reminder of our strategic focus. We start with our strategic plan, the board approved plan, including the strategic plan goals, works through our balanced scorecard, our focus areas and enablers, works into our business plan for the 5-year plan, and we're now at the budget for 2023, along with our 5-year financial plan compliant with the district financial policies. So here is our 5-year financial plan for 2023 through 2027. As you can see, it's showing very strong bottom line results, $89 million forecasted for 2023, and significantly strong results for the remainder of the period. I'm going to be going through each of these areas in more detail, so I won't cover them all here today or right on this slide. This is in line, pretty close in line with our business plan that you've seen, and consistent with that, and it's about $162 million better than the forecast at last year's budget adoption over the five-year period. So a substantial improvement, just mostly due to improved wholesale power prices, environmental attribute values are the primary drivers of that improvement. Okay, and then looking at our financial metrics during that time frame, we're also anticipating being in compliance with all of our financial policies, liquidity, combined cover, debt ratio. Days cash on hand, we do anticipate being within 10% of that metric, and we have forecasted borrowing in 2025, a small amount to fund our capital programs, investment programs, as well as stay in compliance with these metrics. So taking a look at 2023, compared to last year's budget, as you can see, it's an improvement of about $27 million from $61.5 million up to $89 million forecasted bottom line. Again, driven by strong revenues, both in the service revenues, primarily from off system sales, as well as in our net surplus energy revenue. We also have a significant increase in operating expenses, driven both by inflationary impacts that we've seen, as well as a significant project slate that we have scheduled for 2023. But overall, a very strong bottom line forecasted of $89 million. Okay, taking a little closer look at the service revenue, we are anticipating an increase in our service revenue for electric, primarily driven by off-system end use, which is a contract is tied to market prices of power that we pass through. And so that segment of our service revenue is up significantly due to the higher market prices we're seeing. We also are seeing growth in our residential and other areas of electric, along with a planned 3% rate increase to take effect in June.
Dave, give me an example. Off-system end use, that's a big number. Give me an example.
This is our Microsoft campus contract with them. And so they have a load profile they've given us, and our contract specifies that we purchase power on their behalf. We provide them the power at the market on an index basis.
Gotcha.
And so as prices go up in the market, this revenue number goes up quite a bit.
Yeah. Okay. Got it.
As part of that.
Yeah. And just to be clear, because it can be confusing, that's for the Puget Sound campus.
It is?
Yep. That's the contract we have with them for the Puget Sound
campus. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I should have clarified that.
Okay.
That's
the
Puget Sound.
It can be confusing with what's happening here and
the
contract we have with them over there.
Right. And that's why we call it off-system end use, because it's an end user, it's a retail electric sale.
Yeah.
It meets those definitions, but it's not on our local system. Yeah. We also see some growth in the HDL, primarily driven by the load forecast for the Diamond Foundry in that area. Overall, a strong increase in our service revenue. We have forecasted smaller growth rates in water and wastewater, 1.5% and 1%. As well as fiber, about 4%, and rate increases of 4% for water and wastewater, and 3% for fiber and telecom. Overall, about an $18 million increase compared to 2022. Looking at our net surplus energy revenue, slice contract revenue is forecasted to be down for 2023, and that's because we have 5% less of the Rocky Reach, Rock Island power sold into slices in 2023, which frees up more power for our block pre-scheduled real time, and the revenues are up there, both because of the longer unhedged position associated with not having that extra 5% in slice contracts, as well as the higher market prices. So that net wholesale is up quite significantly due to those higher market prices. In the long-term hydro contract area, those are cost-based contracts. We have some increased costs for 2023, so that increases our forecast of revenues from those contracts, as well as the inclusion of environmental attribute sales from the Puget contract that was agreed to this year. Small item, Nine Canyons is here. A little bit of an increased forecast there, despite the planned end of the debt service in 2023. There's a new element to start to begin to build a decommissioning fund for that. So that's why that's
great. Pardon me.
Okay, other operating revenue. We have our transmission wheeling revenue. This is a cost-based contract also, cost-based revenue source associated with some of our long-term hydro contracts and others. So as we increase our investments in that system, our revenues are increased accordingly. Other real-time contract items are in line with the 2022 budget. Our long-term contract admin fees, we adjust according to the contract terms, and that was up about $1 million in our forecast for 2023. So just to highlight some of our major O&M operations and maintenance activities that drive our budget. You heard Mitch talking about the Rocky Beach turbine repairs. We have about $12 million in the budget for those repairs for C-10 and C-11 this year. That's a picture that Mitch provided to me of, I believe it's C-9, as that work was being done on that unit previously. We also have continuing work with tree trimming to maintain our system reliability, our hatchery programs to maintain compliance with our license agreements, our HCP. We have another number of other projects, including our Rock Island Fishway ladder drop structure, and I was going to give a candy bar to anybody who could tell me what that does, but I didn't know either, so I had to ask Ian Hunter, and he explained to me that brings water from the forebay down through some valves and provides attraction water to the entrance to the fish ladder. Hmm. So that's a structure that needs some repair in a concrete, and something we'll be looking at this year. We also have a number of projects related to the modernizations in Rock Island. One of them is the Powerhouse 2 generator main leads. And so this happens to be an O&M project to replace those leads, but it's all part of that modernization effort. And we have some repairs at the Tumwater Dam spillway. This is a project that was actually planned for this year. It's been deferred to 2023 and 2024. Okay, looking at a comparison to 2022 in some of these areas, we talked about the hydro O&M and hydro fish and wildlife projects with the repairs to the Rocky Reach large units, Powerhouse 1 projects, and the fishway repairs that we had on the last slide. The Parks and Recreation, we have, in addition to our normal parks operations, we have a hillside repair plan for the Discovery Center at Rocky Reach. Some significant irrigation replacement plans being developed for some of our parks. Some of the other areas are fairly consistent with our 2022 budget. We continue with operating those systems and continued network growth at the fiber network. Water and wastewater, we see some increase in costs. We're adding a couple apprentices, support system growth, customer accounts and service. We've seen some increased labor rates, continue our conservation programs, and insurance. We are anticipating some fairly substantial insurance premium increases we've seen over recent years. And the FERC fees, we're forecasting at last year's actual billing. We've seen continuing increases in those costs also. In the other admin and general area, there's a number of things in there, but one of the items we're seeing is some increased investment in information technology support, as well as cybersecurity, and there's also some facilities connection costs and facilities moving costs as we move into the new building next year. So overall, our expenses are up versus 2022, about 20, 26 million there. The non-operating expense area, we're seeing higher interest rates, which on our cash balances. You heard Heather talk about that a little bit earlier today. We'll see a slow increase in that over time. Contribution income has been very strong from customer connections, forecasting a little bit higher next year. Interest expense, as we are paying down debt, we're having a lower amount of debt interest payments. So that kind of wrapped up our O&M section. I just want to talk about some major capital projects and our capital budget. Rock Island, as we've talked about many times, is a major driver there. We have our modernizations going on both at Powerhouse 1 and Powerhouse 2. We have work budgeted for B3 and B8, as well as in Powerhouse 2, Unit U5. It's a major project with close to $50 million budgeted for that project, including conversion of that to air-filled hubs. Just note, this picture here was provided by John Sagasser, our engineering managers down there, and this is us lifting the roof, doing a test lift to prepare for the bridge crane replacement. And we also need to remove the roof when we take out the generator for this project. So I got to take out the roof to get things in and out of there. We also have a number of other projects related. We have the Powerhouse 1 gantry crane. That's a project that's been delayed a couple of years. And some projects related to modernization, such as this Rock Island draft tube gate cylinders and hydraulic power units. You heard today a little bit more about our facilities, our operations and service center. Expect to be completing that project next year. And also wrapping up the Rocky Reach Central Maintenance projects, which is mostly complete, but some work to continue into next year. Other major capital projects, Rocky Reach Tail Race Gantry Crane, the Dryden Wastewater Upgrade is something you're familiar with, $5 million budgeted for that. And then the Jump Off Ridge Switch Yard. This is the switch yard substation associated with Microsoft's data center that's going down here in the Malaga area. Right now, we have budgeted $34 million for 2023. And I would just note that that's a customer-funded project. They've already, as you noted in the presentation Mark did, they've provided us with $42 million for some of the cost, for the initial part of the cost, and we'll be providing more as we move along in the project. It's at this point, an $86 million total project estimate. A couple other substations are under construction or beginning work in 2023, the Bavarian substation, North Shore Chelan substation, and we're continuing the advanced metering infrastructure project that got started this year in earnest anyway. It's been on the works for quite a while, but we'll be doing more of that next year. And the fiber expansion continues with $5 million budgeted for public power benefit expansion of the system. Okay, just a quick comparison with the 2022 capital budget. You can see the electric distribution and transmission budgets are both up significantly, and that's both of those are due to the Jump Off Ridge substation switchyard. $14 million of that, $16 million in electric distribution is due to that substation, and about $20 million of the $21 million is due to it in the transmission area. So that is split between those two areas. Rocky Reach Hydro, we've got the tail race gantry crane and spillway electrical we've talked about, up about $3 million for the year or in our budget. Rock Island, of course, as I mentioned, is a significant investment at $64 million of capital investment planned for this year. And again, the Powerhouse 2 Unit U5 is the biggest driver behind that, and a lot of those other projects we discussed. Lake Chelan Hydro, Mark mentioned the auto closure gate had been deferred from this year. We'll be picking it up next year and hopefully completing that in 2024. And then in the corporate shared assets, the main driver here for both 2022 and 23 has been the operations and service center and other facilities projects. That number is down quite a bit for 2023 just because of the high level of budget in 2022. So overall, this is just for Integrated Electric, $201 million. Continuing with that, in fiber, we continue our power public power benefit expansion upgrades. Water has some SCADA system as well as increased level of water main replacements planned and some meter replacements and wastewater. As you know, as the Dryden wastewater upgrade is the big driver there. So overall, about $215 million in projects compared to $196 last year. Kind of a unique situation, as we noted, with the customer-funded project. We don't typically see this large of a customer-funded one. With this, you can see it in the regulatory liability contributions in aid of construction of $36 million. $34 million of that is related to the jump-off ridge substation switchyard. So when you consider all these other adjustments for customer contributions and offsets, the net capital and regulatory asset plan for 2023 is $181 million, which is actually down from 2022. Okay, the board also approves individual capital project budgets as well as the current year budget, and so that we have a list here of projects that are existing projects that need a budget increase of $1 million or more. So there's a number of projects here. We heard extensive discussion about the operations and service center earlier today. We have $20 million at this stage in our planning, and that's going up to $25 million. And then with the Powerhouse 1 modernization, this is a combination of four units, B8, 1, 2, and 3, with all the delays in the projects and inflation and challenges we've seen with supply chain and labor and all those things. We've seen increased costs in those projects, about $8.3 million for those four projects combined in increases. It's kind of a common theme we've seen and heard today as you listen to others about the inflation, supply chain challenges, labor challenges, all those things driving costs up, and particularly with projects where we put them on the books and we have to defer them for one reason or another. As time goes by, then the costs tend to go up as we get to those. So we've seen that with a number of projects on this list. The ink tray gantry crane is one of those that was planned a couple of years ago, still hasn't moved forward, so we're planning for that for 2023. We mentioned the draft tube gate cylinder project that also needs some increases in the budget there. With the Powerhouse 2 HVAC upgrades, this is a project that was actually split as partially an O&M project and partially capital. And in reviewing that information, it's been determined that really that should all be capital. So we need an increase in the capital budget. There's an offsetting decrease in our O&M costs associated with that project becoming all capital. I mentioned the Rocky Reach tail race gantry crane. Same situation with project delays from when we originally scoped that project out. The Powerhouse 2 motor control centers, we've actually just been adding 1 year of project scope at a time in this budget. It's a multi-year project, forecasted at about $6 million total, adding about $1.3 million for 2023 work. And the Wright Bank, Rock Island Wright Bank, fish ladder modifications, we saw increased costs with both just delays in the project and just increased scope as we got further into the work that needed to be done in that project. So there's other projects that need budget increases. smaller than $1 million, and those are on the total list of projects and capital projects that you have. So this is the list of new capital projects. There's just five here that are listed that are $1 million or greater. The Chelan Falls Hatchery Abatement Pond Improvements, something that was looked at a couple of years ago. It kind of changed your recommended alternative to make sure we're getting the right, the effluent to a proper level for discharge into the river so we're not contaminating things. We have a replacement crane planned for central maintenance, this Rock Island Spillway modernization. I would note this $2 million we have planned here is just for us to develop final designs. And it's the total project right now is in the forecast at about $58 million. We're still under evaluation as to what the total cost of that project will be. And then the Rocky Reach Juvenile Fish Bypass replacing the control system, $1 million project over 2022, 2023, and 2024. Okay, the next two slides talk about some of the new positions that are included in the financial results and in our budget for 2023, and I'm going to turn it over to General Manager Kirk Hudson to talk about these.
Thanks, Dave. Just wanted to start with, every year we look at our strategic plan and where we're at with our strategic plan and our business plans that support that, and identify where we're needing support in order to meet all of our objectives. And you'll recognize a few things here in terms of what's proposed for the 20 new positions. I'll just start by saying one of the things that we're trying to do is build staffing capability and resiliency. Another one we've talked about is on the innovation side of things. And when we talk about building staff capability and resiliency, there's a couple of things that stand out to me. One of them is that we've got a number of processes where we're relying on one single employee. And if something happens to that one employee, or they leave or retire, a lot of our processes stop or struggle for a period of time. And so that's one of the things we did in business planning this year, was to look at these where we have these potential single points of failure to identify where we could build staff resiliency. Another thing that we're recognizing is that you saw the volume of capital work and O&M work that we have. It's very significant, and we've got a number of managers around the district that are in leadership roles and are also managing multi-million dollar projects at the same time. And so, as you can imagine, oftentimes you have to pick one or the other at times. And so we're trying to identify places where we can support those managers and free them up more. So I'll walk through these, and I'll try and do it quickly, but just to give you a feel for some of the drivers for these positions. You can see right off the bat, there's seven positions on the project support side. We're trying to shore up our capabilities there. And there's a number of efforts that are driving this, and most significant for those seven positions is the work down at Rock Island. Just a tremendous amount of work happening at Rock Island with Powerhouse 2 and the construction manager side of things. We're looking at 6 days a week and multiple shifts with the contractor, and so we want to make sure we're staying on top of that. So you can see there that a number of positions on the project support side. The telecom engineer is one I want to highlight, and that is we have a couple of engineers with a lot of experience here that are likely going to leave us. And so this one is more of a succession planning to get somebody in and trained up and ready when we end up losing one or more of those telecommunications engineers. Actually, out of the 20, there's at least six positions that are on the succession planning side of things, getting ready for people to retire. Can't say for certain, because our needs change all the time, whether or not they'll offset those retirements, but they are definitely in the wings of getting people ready for others to leave. And the hydro capability, that's three of them there as well that are in the succession planning category, as well as the the big increase in work down at Rock Island, that those are intended to support that effort. System growth, there's another couple of water apprentice trainees there, as well as a communication lineman. You know, our infrastructure is growing every year, particularly the amount of substations we're talking about building. So there'll be more assets that need to be maintained and stayed on top of. So, you know, we want to make sure we're staying on top of that. Then on the technology and innovation side, there's a couple of positions in IT, one the service desk and enterprise application analyst. We've got a number of systems that we rely on heavily, and we'll continue to actually add to that. And one of the drivers there on the enterprise application analyst is what we're going to do with customer engagement. And you'll see that tied below with the AMI. We're going to have some big opportunities with our AMI system to be able to provide things that our customers will, I think, value greatly in terms of how they do business with us and information we can provide them. And that's moving over to the customer service side. We've been actually having a contractor do the customer service specialist on the fiber and telecom side for a while, and we know that we're going to be doing what we're doing for a while. We're losing that contractor, so we're proposing to bring that in internally. And then on the human resources side, one of our key focus points is employee development, and you'll see a training coordinator there. We're trying to, we're going to increase the amount of training we do, both on the safety side and the employee development side. And so we're trying to consolidate that into the HR efforts. And also on the generalist, you'll see that that is one where it's on the resiliency side of things. We have a lot of people with their subject matter expertise in HR. And so we're looking for a generalist that can help out, support, and cross-train in the different areas so that if we lose somebody through a retirement or leaving, that we've got somebody that can be trained up and step in quicker. And then on the safety side, this is the position we actually added this year, and it's on the safety management system to support one of our key pillars for getting to top safety performance. So in a nutshell, those are the positions that we are proposing for the budget. Just always want to make clear, you know, how many there are and what the basis is for those. And so any step of the way, all the way up until, you know, the next budget hearing, if you've got comments or questions, feel free to send those my way.
Okay, thanks, Kirk. Okay, so this slide sums up the total combined district expenditures, and as you can see, we're down just slightly from 2022. The primary drivers of that decrease are lower net capital and principal payments, offset by increased operating expense, as we talked about, due to the hydro and fishway repairs is the big drivers there. So it's a large budget with a lot of capital projects, a lot of significant O&M projects, a lot of work plan for 2023. Taking another look at our 2023 financial policies, we anticipate being in compliance with all of our requirements. We do see under the unusual case that we would be within 10% of our days cash on hand, and our action item in that, if that case occurred, would be to issue debt sooner than the expected plan. With our smaller systems, we continue to look for opportunities to improve, particularly in our operating coverage areas. We're not quite meeting the metrics that we'd like to. I would note this debt service as a percentage of revenue for wastewater, that's really driven by the Shaston loan that wasn't part of the planning at the time the metrics were created. Decisions still need to be made around that and how we're moving forward with that. And that kind of concludes our my presentation. We're going to be doing some continued review and adjustments in November. We'll be back on the 21st with a second budget hearing and then requesting approval on the 5th. So with that, if there's any additional questions, I'd be happy to try to answer those for you.
Thank you, Dave. Commissioners, any questions?
Good presentation.
Look forward to the next presentation.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
Okay. Let's go back to Resolution 15.
Sounds good.
Next one.
Okay. Agenda item 15 is a resolution ratifying field work order change orders number 13 through 17 for the Service Center project with Absher Construction Company of Puyallup, Washington for construction of the Service Center project pursuant to General Contractor Construction Manager contract number 18-91. And with us is David Lodge, who gave us a little introduction of this morning, and that we would be seeing more of these in the future. David?
Thank you, Kirk. David Lodge, Project Management Manager. So this resolution ratifies change orders 13 through 17 in a total amount of $930,729, bringing the total contract amount to $106,895,209. So the reason we're requesting this to be ratified is the project delegated authority established by resolution last year is $1 million for field work order change orders. So this puts us at the limit of that delegated authority. So ratification renews that, and we are currently negotiating additional changes. But the changes in this resolution are all within the current project contingency. And so this resolution does not change the project budget. So there's quite a few specific changes on an appendix or an attachment in the resolution, but I want to highlight a couple of them. Change order number 15 is related to the Building A cultural delay that occurred early last year, and that is in the amount of $395,000. That change added 5 weeks to our construction contract as a result of that delay, and so that moves our substantial completion date to December 19th of this year, which will be getting revised from the presentation we had this morning. Also, highlight is change order number 16. One of the items in there is replanting of landscape plants. That was related to the overall schedule delay we discussed this morning, and that was one of the early items we had to take action on to get the plants ready to come next year by replanting. So we're negotiating a number of other items that will be brought forth at a later date, but that is the the other items on this resolution are generally related to typical architectural and electrical changes that we'd have throughout the course of the construction. Any questions?
Okay. Commissioners, any questions for David? Okay. So is there a motion to approve this resolution?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept Resolution 15 as presented.
I'll second the motion.
Thank you. Discussion? Questions? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
You said opposed too fast.
I did.
I think that was unanimous.
Yes. Motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Thanks,
Randy.
Yeah. Either that or you, my fellow commissioners, have to speed up.
Okay, Kirk, let's move into manager items.
Okay, I'd like to invite Jennifer Burns up for the next manager item. Thanks for being patient, Jennifer.
Oh, for sure. So, Jennifer Burns, Environmental Cultural Program Manager. And I actually am here to, I have some good news to report. It will literally take 1 minute, but I'd like to share with you that we are here to share a positive news story regarding a recent event held by the Colville Confederated Tribes. Specifically, they put on a celebration dinner that was designed to honor their elders. At the event, we, Chelan PUD, received a certificate of appreciation and recognition of our contributions for protecting cultural resources. And just to give you a little bit of a background, we do have a requirement under our FERC license to create what they call a traditional cultural properties management plan. And under that, and we did do that back in 2011, but as part of the completed management plan, we need to document traditional cultural properties in what we call the area of potential effect, which is essentially our project boundary at Chelan. So we started doing this. We actually contract with the Colville to do it. We started doing it in 2014, and we are anticipating being done with it in 2023, December 2023. So we're almost finished. So that's really all I came to talk about.
Very good.
If you have any questions, I'd gladly answer them.
Thank you.
Nice to receive the recognition.
If anyone wants to see it, I've got it.
All right.
Should pass it around. It'd be good.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, I'll do that.
Yeah. Thanks, Jennifer.
Yeah, you bet.
Next, I'd like to invite Tina Huchert up for a Wi-Fi status decommissioning update.
Yes. I'm Trini Huchert, and I work with Bob Shane with the Fiber and Telecom Department. I'm the Community Outreach Specialist. And so we wanted to bring resolution 20-14447, need glasses, and the decommissioning of that Wi-Fi at the end of this year. If you recall, that resolution was an emergency resolution that temporarily suspended portions of the district's wholesale telecommunication services rates and to allow the district and district service providers to enable broadband access to telecommunication services during the period of COVID-19. This was done in partnership with service providers to aid children with ongoing remote schooling and the public with access to vital services and information necessary for health and safety. This resolution was set to expire, or is set to expire, at the end of this year, as I stated. And it actually was a very valuable service. We thank you for your support of our community with that. But it is no longer serving the intended need or scope of this resolution. Currently, Localtel remains as the last service provider providing this service. We've been in contact with them. They will place a banner on their captive portal and splash page, letting the public know that the service will end at the end of this year. And then just some stats. We started with about 12 locations. I wasn't in fiber yet, but I think it was about 12 locations. We pared that down as we saw the need was not as great, and we're left with 5 locations, which were, in the last 90 days, our stats were we had 47 clients in the Sage Bluff apartment area in Chelan, not just the apartments, but in that area, 11 in the Malaga Market area, Leavenworth City Pool had 5, Chelan County Fair had 5. We took out the stats for the during the fair because it wasn't a good indicator of use, and then Beehive Grange had 2. Any questions for me or Bob?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Trina. And Bob Shane.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Bob Shane, Managing Director of Fiber and Telecom. You might recall back in August, we provided an update to the Public Power Benefit Fiber Program, and we had identified some struggles we were having in meeting the premises pass targets as we had intended. At that time, we offered up some possible outcome scenarios of what that might look like if we proceeded under currently 4 different options of scope, schedule, and budget. There are a number of questions asked by the board at that time, and we also had some information that we wanted to get back to you on. We did target this board meeting to give you a full update on what that would look like and going forward to meet the overall objectives, but we're struggling to get there. Quite a bit of work has been completed. It's cross-functional. Groups within the district have spent quite a bit of time putting together the numbers. We're looking at the analytics to make sure that our base numbers are understood in terms of what we're trying to accomplish in terms of premises passed. Did quite a bit of work. GIS, customer utility, and fiber have put a lot of work together to make sure we're really solid on the numbers. That's really important because from that we'll develop our implementation plan and then the cost to support that. That's about where we are right now. We're now moving into the finalizing on understanding the data. Now we're looking to see how we would actually implement solutions and then come up with a cost to come back to the board with some recommendations or some options. So I apologize for not having it ready for this board presentation. A lot of work has been done, but we are coming up short on getting the objective. We want to make sure we bring to the board some high quality outcomes, make sure that we have our numbers right. Because the program is going to last for another 4 years, there's a lot of changing things on the horizon, and we're trying to anticipate what that might be. So we have to minimally come back to the board as we go and progress through the project. As a reminder, we are continuing with the public power benefit program. We're not stopping it. We are continuing. So we'll still make progress, but I don't think we'll get back to the board until maybe the early part of 2023 with a better scope, schedule, and budget options around how the public power benefit program will proceed. So with that, are there any questions that I can maybe help you with?
I would just add there is a tremendous amount of work, as Bob stated, from different departments in the district that are looking at this. And, you know, anytime you start peeling back the onion, you find things, and you just we know that, you know, we'll be asking for guidance on where we go with those four options. And we just really want to make sure that we have accurate data so that we can, you know, provide the best information possible to inform a decision there.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Appreciate the update. Look forward to the next presentation.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. That's it for manager items.
Okay. Let's move into commission travel with Lisa.
And she heard her name called.
Run through the door. It's quite an entrance.
I was beckoned. Okay. So we have commission travel. We're getting to the end of the year. And first two items have happened already. We have Waputa Association meetings for November. They're Zoom only. So would anyone like to be registered for that?
Don't think we have to for November, do we?
Okay. Oh, we need to register for the annual conference.
Right.
Okay, so I have Commissioners Arsenault, McKenna, and Smith, who have indicated they want to attend this event.
I think I do too, Lisa.
Okay.
Yay is right.
I know. Yay.
That's good news, Dennis.
So
I have another vaccination, so
are you looking at checking in the November 29th and out the 3rd? What are your, I guess Commissioner Smith wants Wednesday and Thursday night only.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay. Mr. McKenna?
I don't remember what I sent to you.
I sent you an email back. You didn't say okay. Which nights.
Yeah, I think the Wednesday morning is for the managers, and it's not for commissioners. Wednesday mm-hmm. afternoon is, Wednesday evening is the first thing for commissioners.
Okay, so Wednesday night and Thursday?
Yeah, I think Wednesday, yeah. Thursday.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Lisa, you know I'm going on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
And your room is arranged.
Yeah,
by
you better.
Right?
Yeah. you got to run the show, Gary. So.
I just want to confirm that your room is handled, Commissioner Arsenault.
Yes, that's right. My room would be taken care of by Waputa.
Okay. So I will confirm the other three reservations. Okay. Then we are into January.
Lisa, this is Ann.
Hi.
Hi, this is Ann. I'm considering, so I'll have to let you know.
The annual conference?
Yes.
Okay.
What's our deadline?
For
hotel, but for registration.
Actually, it was today, and I tried to log in, and there were no rooms available, so I need to call and see. We can get rooms that way.
I have a room reserved. I did that a while ago just in case.
Oh.
But I'm not sure. So I I went ahead and reserved that. And if I don't end up going, I can cancel. But what about registration, though? What's the deadline on that?
I'm not sure there is one, but I can do it this afternoon.
For you, Ann, we can get you in.
I'm not sure there's a hurry.
But I don't want to do it and then not be able to make it and have to cancel. So maybe I'll call Lena and talk to Lena about it. How's that? And then I'll let you know.
All right. And if I don't hear from you, I'll follow up on Friday.
Okay. That sounds good. Okay. Thank you.
All right.
And thank you, Gary.
Love to see you there, Ann. Hopefully you can make it.
The next event that we need to deal with rooms for is the legislative rally in D.C. February 27th through March 1st. I have Commissioners Smith and McKenna have indicated they want to attend. Is there anyone else?
Yes, Lisa, you should have me down attending, and I've made my own room reservations.
Okay.
So please double check your records, make sure that I'm registered.
Okay. Commissioners Bowles or Congdon, Commissioner McKenna, anyone else interested?
No, thanks.
Thank you. If you haven't done already, okay. I'm going to get back to you.
Okay. Commissioner Bowles?
Oh, I'm interested, but I'm ineligible. I don't think I'll be part of the party.
Well, we can't pay for you anyway. Sorry. I'm just going to be in denial until the very end.
Yeah.
Lisa, there's also...
That started about 6 months ago for me.
There's also, in January, there's the PUD Association Legislative Olympia, first week of January.
I have Waputa meetings, 11 through 13. Are you...
Of January?
Something else?
Yeah, oh, you've got us down for that already.
I only have confirmed Commissioner Arsenault.
I'll be going.
Okay.
I will too.
Okay. And that's that. So I did reserve some rooms for this, the legislative rally, and I booked them from the 26th. To check out March 2nd. Does that sound right?
I'm not looking at a calendar, so I got to trust you on that one.
Okay. Well, it's the 27th through the 1st. So I held it the day before to the day after. Okay. And so I have 3 rooms for that.
In D.C.
4 rooms. I have 4 rooms held.
In D.C. In case new commissioners.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I'll just change names on those. As we need to.
So Lisa, I've already had my room booked, so don't make sure that one of those are not for me.
Okay.
Well, we've got potential of 2 new commissioners. We don't know what they, what their desires will be. So she's making room reservations in case they want to go.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. Do we want to go into April or should we wait till we...
I think we're good.
Have
I think
some
we're
more good. Information.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go on to commission items number A, board workshop and tri-commission meetings. Do I have a motion for those 2 meeting dates?
I would move that we set Monday, December 12th, 2022 at 9 a.m. for the purpose of holding a board workshop. And Tuesday, December 13th, 2022, at 1 p.m. for the purpose of holding a tri-commission meeting.
Do I have a second?
At Confluence Center. At Confluence Technology, 285 Technology Center Way, Wenatchee. You're welcome.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. And Randy, you requested to make a motion?
I did. In deference to Kelly Boyd and Dennis Bowles, some items require more or less soak time. Today's item, in my eyes, requires less soak time. And based on the conversation we had this morning about our current year, we are significantly over budget in revenues, and we faced some challenges with our capital project, our service center. I'd like to blend those two after a fashion, and I would move that we move $25 million from our unrestricted reserve to a designated service center fund. Oh, I'd like to direct staff to deposit an amount of $25 million into the board designated Headquarters Service Center Strategic Facilities Fund. The fund was established per board motion April 3, 2017, for the purpose of investing in the long-term strategic facilities plan.
Do I hear a second on the Randy's motion?
I'll second that motion.
Any discussion on that? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? There are none. Motion passes.
Aye.
Oh, you're saying. Sorry, Ann.
Better clarify.
Yeah. So it was Ann voted aye as well, so unanimous vote. Thank you. All right. Follow up on...
I have one other commissioner item.
Oh, thank you.
I just had to do this. Sometimes my mind works in crazy ways, and I was thinking about the assets that we have. And I asked myself the question, what would it cost today to build a 1,000-megawatt hydro project? And I went to Google. Google never lies. And just so we all have an understanding of what we have here in Chelan County, Google indicates somewhere in the neighborhood of $7 billion to build a 1,000-megawatt project today. So just sort of absorb that.
You could get the permit.
If you... So I just thought I'd toss that out as a commissioner.
Great. Thank you, Randy. Do we have any other commission items? I forgot to ask that. Okay. Hearing none, follow up on delegation of action items from prior board meetings.
Yeah, so we had one that was an update from Kelly on the interest rate for debt on which we're making early payments, and she completed that. That was from the October 17th board meeting. She completed that on October 19th. And then moving on to the next item 20 on the agenda, we had a new one today, which Katie was going to determine whether or not there are local hiring requirements and requirements for apprentices on the Rock Island modernization project. And she'll follow up with Tony Edwards of the Carpenters Union.
Any other delegation of action items for today?
That was all we captured, unless we missed something.
All right. Do we have any additional public comment at this time? Okay, I see none on the screen as well. What are you doing?
You're getting that one without ink.
Do we have any other matters of general business as may necessarily come before the commission today? Okay, hearing none, we will be moving into executive session to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party and or legal risk as authorized by statute. Also to consider the selection of a site or acquisition of real estate by lease or purchase when public knowledge regarding such consideration would cause a likelihood of increased price as authorized by statute. And to consider the minimum price at which real estate will be offered for sale or lease when public knowledge regarding consideration would cause a likelihood of decreased price as authorized by statute. And to review the performance of a public employee as authorized by statute. And we will be in executive session for approximately
2 hours.
2 hours.
We'll see what we can do there.
Wow.
Yeah. I know.
Okay. So at this time, we are in recess.
5 minutes?
For 5 minutes.
Peter, I'd love to see you.
We're coming out of executive session. No decisions were made. No votes were taken. It is now 4:30, 28 in the afternoon. Our meeting is concluded. Thank you.